Welcome to another episode of Mini Fellowship in Movement Disorders, where we take most challenging concepts in movement disorders and simplify them into easy-to-follow explanations. I'm your host, Danish Bahati, a movement disorder neurologist who loves to teach physicians online, especially in the developing countries.
Thank you for sharing this wonderful case, Dr. Walla. So you also earned the honor and prize of being the first participant to share a clinical case on their practice. So you have just earned yourself a bonus 5 points for being such a superb and active participant and for sharing such a wonderful case. This is a really, really cool case. Before I come to the case itself, I see that you use this word stuttering. And I want to just share a few things about stuttering with you. Stuttering is when someone gets stuck on sound within a word. So let's say the word is tomorrow. And if, let's say, someone is stuttering, what's going on there is that they will say tomorrow or tomorrow. Or so the stuttering can be at the first syllabus, middle, or the last syllabus. I'm not sure if there are known association between if the stuttering happens at the beginning of the word or the end of the word in terms of its pathology. But generally speaking, the most common reason for stuttering is psychogenic etiology or psychiatric reasons or functional movement disorder. In the actual clinical practice, the stuttering is very rare, but you could see it occasionally in the setting of freezing of speech in Parkinson's disease. So patients with Parkinson's disease who have significant freezing and akinesia in their off states with motor fluctuation can have a stuttering, which is a freezing of their speech, where they are stuck and they're trying to speak, and it's really breaking. And I may have only two or three patients out of the 3,000 patients I see with Parkinson's disease who have that stuttering of speech from freezing that way. So stuttering itself is extremely rare. It should be separated from the blocking of speech, which could be either speech blocking or the thought blocking, where they just suddenly stop and then they start going again, which is not the same as stuttering. Similarly, it should also be separated from dysarthria, when there is a poor coordination of words being put together, rather than breaking of the syllabus and re-repetition of the syllabus. So it's almost like the word started and person stopped, went back a little, then start again, then stop, then went back a little and start. So it's like playing that tape in rewind to a very small microsecond of that tape a few times before the word continues. That's what is a classic stuttering. I also want to quickly point out here, so many of these concepts that I share during the feedback on these videos, I will build upon them as we go through the course, and I will share more and more details. So there is definitely more to these things. And if you have a specific question, I'm happy to answer, but I will try to bring this up more and more later on. So for example, we should also have a clear distinction between what is phonation, what is articulation. So what is dysphonia? What is dysarthria? And then stuttering is something separate from it, and then aphasia is something separate from it, right? So there are multiple different aspects of speech. There is also intonation, so there's loss of intonation or flat speech. There is grammatical errors, and then there is what is called semantic error, and then there are paraphrasic errors. So there is various different aspects to speech production, which have different meaning, distinct presentation, and a distinct way of examination. So just to give you an example, I will not cover the whole speech evaluation right now, but just to give you an examination, that phonation is the sound production unrelated to the tongue or jaw or lip movement. So the sound that is producing from the vocal cords is the phonation. So if you ask your patient to open their mouth and say, and there is no articulation involved, this is the pure phonation. So you can say you can say E, high pitch, or low pitch, O. And we sometimes assess the phonation if we are looking at the vocal cord involvement. So for example, spasmodic dysphonia, which is a laryngeal or vocal cord dystonia, will be assessed by checking phonation separately from articulation. Now, articulation is the use of the tongue, jaw, and lip and to produce and the pharynx to produce modification of the sound, modification of the phonation sound. So the phonation that is being produced does not have any associated meaning to it, is not an alphabet, it's not a word, but you convert it into a word piece, a segment, by adding articulation either in your throat or in your tongue, back of the tongue, front of the tongue, tip of the tongue, from your teeth, from your lips, and that's called articulation. And articulation is then divided in various different ways. The easiest way to divide articulation is to define articulation as labial, lips, lingual, tongue, labiolingual, both lips and tongue, and guttural, meaning back of the tongue or throat. So for example, pa 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 is labial, la 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 is lingual, pataka 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 is labiolingual, and ga 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 is guttural. And then you look at the articulations that way, and you can look at it with these isolated sounds. And then you also assess it by having them read words and sentences, which is a combination of these various articulated sounds. And then sometimes you use a particular sentence because it creates the kind of phonation or articulation that we want. So for example, in spasmodic dysphonia with adductor dysphonia, the trigger often is a high-pitched phonation of E running into the sounds that are being articulated, mostly guttural and sometimes nasal. So for example, the favorite sentence I have to assess for spasmodic dysphonia is, we eat eels every day, which has not a lot of articulation, but a lot of high-pitched E sound coming in as phonation within the sentence. So there is an art to examining the speech, just like there is an art to examining the handwriting, as I shared earlier. These are advanced tasks that have multiple layers of components built in. Like I explained in the speech, there is similar various components built in handwriting, and these tasks are very useful for us to assess as movement disorder experts for diagnosis, and they're very important because they're often involved in patients' diseases and disorders, because these are very advanced learned tasks that kids learn as they grow up, and they are very susceptible to these movement disorders. Now, coming back to the video, sorry for a very long introduction. The case that you're presenting of this young guy, in the very first video, and I'm going to play these videos as I describe these to you, my handicap, of course, is that I don't speak Arabic and I don't understand Arabic, but I have been able to successfully assess for these speech problems even with that handicap. So with that handicap, I would say that I did not pick up any stuttering of this patient throughout this video. What I am picking up is an abnormality of articulation, which is called dysarthria or disarticulation. And if you pay attention to his face, especially as his lips and jaw area, as he starts speaking, the thing that you note is that there is excessive lip pulling in with lip pinching. So the lips are coming in and pinching each other. And the jaw sometimes seems to open up as he's trying to speak with his lips closed. So that creates a special kind of a phase where if you do it right now, listening to me, is close your lips and keep your lips closed and open your jaw. And you will see that the closed rounded lip gets pulled in, sucked in a little bit, which is showing that there is a jaw opening happening behind a closed lip, which is not normal. People, when they need to open the jaw, they don't close the lips. And when the lips are closed, they usually don't need to open the jaw at that time. So the jaw opening seems to be unusual happening at that time. And that seems to drop in between his words occasionally, where suddenly he has this again kind of a look as if jaw is opening excessively, unnecessarily, because the lips are closed. And then he has this kind of a mouth, what we call pursed lips, meaning that the lips are like you're blowing a hole or trying to whistle. So with your lips all closed, narrow together and pushed out, forming a circular O, you will see right around at 7 seconds in the video, if I pause, you can see that kind of a pursing of the lip that I'm talking about, which happens in his speech, which is also not usual. So if I keep looking at him trying to speak with these kind of abnormal lip closures, and what I'm actually seeing is an excessive jaw opening in the words where it is not required. There's just too much of jaw opening, which is creating abnormal articulation of the lip, of the tongue, likely secondary to the excessive jaw opening. And there are some movements that he does. For example, his lip touches his lower, his tongue touches his lower lip, which I believe, again, I am not Arabic speaker, but I believe that that kind of a movement is likely some form of a compensatory movement to try to calm down that jaw that is trying to open up excessively, unnecessarily, as he's trying to speak. So there are some additional thrown in movements that are probably his own efforts to try to make the articulation better. And what he's not aware of is that his jaw is not behaving and is trying to do things that he doesn't want and leading to problems with his lips. There may be a primary problem of the lip itself. Sometimes you can have lip quenching and pushing as a primary abnormal movement in addition to the jaw, but that becomes really hard without examining the patient face to face through extensive reading of reading materials or repeating sounds. A lot of time when you have this kind of articulation problem, what you have to do is that you have to step back to the components of sounds themselves. So rather than examining during the speech, you then ask patient to start doing the articulations, like say pa 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 pa, say la 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 la. So you try to see what happens during lingual movement, what happens during labial movement, because speech is such a combination of so many movements that it becomes hard to say, okay, are the lip just compensating or adapting to the excessive jaw movement, or they're in themselves involved or not involved. The other thing that I notice on this guy is that he has a very deep nasolabial fold. So there are two deep creases running around his nostrils, around the nose, going down to the sides of the mouth. Such a deep crease that is very noticeable on a video is usually not normal. Again, there could be ethnic differences, and I believe he's an Arab ethnicity, which may be different than, let's say, Caucasian or Asians. But I would venture and say that he has, even for his own race, so if his family member sitting next to him, you would not see such a deep crease on his family, on his face, as compared to his rest of the family members. So which means that that might also be abnormal, either primarily or as a secondary result of the jaw and lip movement, or as a compensatory behavior. All these three things are possible. So putting all of this information on observation together, the most likely diagnosis is oromandibular dystonia, OMD. Oromandibular dystonia can be a jaw opening dystonia, a jaw closing dystonia, could be a tongue dystonia, lingual dystonia, but it's more often a combined dystonia. We submitted an abstract on our experience of 54 cases of oromandibular dystonia from our Botox clinic to AAN this year, which got canceled, but our abstract is probably published online. If you search by my name on AAN abstract, you'll probably see that abstract pop up on oromandibular dystonia. And what we found was that the dystonias were far more likely to be a combination of some form of jaw and tongue movement, or jaw and tongue movement associated with some other dystonia in the body. So he may have a facial dystonia. I don't see his full face. That nasolabial crease, if that's abnormal, could be a facial dystonia. I don't see his upper face or eyes. I cannot tell if he has any cervical dystonia, which is often associated with the oromandibular dystonia, or limb dystonia, which can sometimes be associated with it. Oromandibular dystonia could be drug-induced or tardive, but sounds like if he has only been on clonazepam and you said Ceroxit, which I'm not sure what it is, but if it's similar to Seroquel, which will be quetiapine, then usually is not a cause of tardive dystonia. So I would venture and say that it's likely not a tardive dystonia, and a tardive oromandibular dystonia is extremely uncommon. It's more likely to be primarily idiopathic. Oromandibular dystonia typically do not have association with other abnormalities, such as Parkinson's disease or other things that can cause dystonia. It's usually primary idiopathic. However, a workup of a dystonia, especially such a young male, should rule out things like Wilson's disease with copper in the brain, NBIA, neurodegeneration with brain iron accumulation, autoimmune disease like neuropsychiatric lupus or Sjogren disease presenting with the secondary dystonia. So autoimmune workup will be very useful. Copper and brain imaging is useful, but I think you said brain imaging is normal. and a good detailed examination to make sure that this is an isolated focal oromandibular dystonia without any other dystonia will be very useful. And then if all the etiology is negative, then it's likely to going to be a primary idiopathic focal dystonia of the jaw, oromandibular dystonia affecting his speech. I was once shared a video of a patient who had a task-specific oromandibular dystonia of Quran recitation. So again, that was a video from, I believe, somewhere in UAE, Dubai or Abu Dhabi, by a neurologist, and he sent me this video where this guy is speaking normally, but as soon as he starts reciting Quran in the recitation voice, in that melodic voice with that special gestures that you do when you're reciting Quran, then he would have a dystonia, and the dystonia was of the sound O. So whenever O kind of a sound or rounding of the lips came up, he would have a task-specific dystonia right there. But this guy, you know, seems to have a dystonia that's present throughout the speech, which goes against a task-specific dystonia, although the question could be raised, is it a task-specific dystonia of speaking? Meaning that the jaw is normal otherwise, such as during drinking water or chewing and eating. And if other jaw movements are normal, then is it just a task-specific dystonia of speaking? But there is a debate on that, if that is such an entity or not. And the last thing I'm going to say is that he had the gest antagonist, which is classic for dystonias, right? Just gest antagonist, meaning doing a gesture which is antagonistic to dystonia. We are still puzzled in the world of movement disorders on why that happens, why doing something as simple as touching your jaw or touching your chin or your ear or wearing something around your ear or like him, putting something in between his teeth, resolves the dystonia. But that's a very, very classic known observation about dystonias of gest antagonist that he has classically, which again further reassures that there is likely oromandibular dystonia. And I think as far as the treatment, we typically try muscle relaxants for medications for the dystonia, such as baclofen and clonazepam. And there are some other anti-dystonia medications like Artane, if there is tremor, or even primidone. I typically avoid dopamine blocking medication, although there is some case for that. So TBZ was not a totally bad idea. But the primary treatment, I believe, as well as expert opinion, is botulinum toxin injection. And that's what we try to also show in the abstract that we submitted to AAN, that the injections for oromandibular dystonia extremely beneficial. Now, he has a jaw opening dystonia, I believe, without thoroughly examining the patient, which will have a different injection plan than a jaw closing dystonia. But we will add the my lecture on oromandibular dystonia to the chemodenumeration module that I've not added in the past, but this year, as a bonus, because of this wonderful first case, I will add my lectures on oromandibular dystonia and my findings and explanations in the chemodenumeration module that we will be doing later on. Sorry for a long message, but I think that because we are still starting, it's good for me to be as descriptive as possible and take these opportunities to be also useful for education. And gradually, hopefully, I will let you guys discuss the cases on your own first before I jump in and give you an opinion. Thank you.
To learn more about the Mini Fellowship, visit our website for University of Nebraska Medical Center, Department of Neurological Sciences, where you can be part of the community and ask us questions. You can write to me on mdclinicforyou@gmail.com. It's mdclinic. number 4 u@gmail.com, and follow me on YouTube for longer discussions by searching for Danish Bahati, DANISH BHATTI. You can also find me on Twitter @Danish_MD and on LinkedIn.